Hello, my name is Bob Bamber and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We're going to jump back in the time machine to November of 1993 where I'm being joined by Craig Wilson.
Good evening.
And we rebuilt him again, Colin Judkins.
Hello.
We've got a rather busy month of news, so Colin, if you kick us off with that.
Okay, the WWF have been indicted on steroid charges. Vince McMahon and Titan Sports were both this month indicted on two counts of steroid law violations. The charges say that both McMahon and Titan Sports conspired to distribute anabolic steroids and to defraud the United States Food and Drug Administration for a period between 1985 and 1991. We've got a full report coming up on that later.
It wasn't exactly plain sailing for WCW either. There was the Arn Anderson and Sid Vicious incident. So the basic gist is chaos ensued at WCW's recent European tour, resulting in both superstars being rushed to hospital. An altercation at a hotel in Blackburn saw Arn Anderson and Sid Vicious stabbing each other with scissors. It is reported that Anderson was on the receiving end of 20 stab wounds, with Vicious receiving 4, and with several superstars threatening to walk out because of said a mutiny was averted when WCW released him from his contract.
The WWF held Survivor Series this month. Lex Luger was the sole survivor in the main event, pinning Ludwig Borg clean to win the match for the All-Americans. The show was dominated by the ongoing Crush Randy Savage feud, which both interfere in each other's Survivor Series matches. We had the Hart family beat Shawn Michaels and his Knights. Michaels replaced Jerry Lawler due to Lawler's legal problems. More on that in a little while. The big angle from the match was the frustration and what seemed to be a heel turn for Owen Hart, looking extremely frustrated at how the limelight was always on his brother Bret.
This month also saw WCW host Clash of the Champions 25. In the main event, Vader took on Ric Flair in what was the best match of the night, although it did have a slightly screwy finish. Elsewhere on the card, we saw the end of, the end of the feud between Austin and Pillman after the breakup of the Hollywood Blondes, and Rick Rude defended the international title against Road Warrior Hawk in the opening encounter.
Okay, we've got the Jerry Lawler legal issues. Jerry Lawler was charged with one count of second-degree rape, three counts of second-degree sodomy, and one count of harassing a witness on the 12th of November, but the charges were dropped within a fortnight. Lawler was swiftly withdrawn from the Survivor Series pay-per-view, although the timeline suggests that he probably could have appeared, but he was replaced by Shawn Michaels, as was planned.
Okay, it seems that I've drawn the short straw this month, having to explain the WCW Battle Bowl pay-per-view. Previously, Battle Bowl had featured on Starrcade 1991 and 1992, but this year saw it as a standalone pay-per-view. The event featured a team tournament where partnerships were drawn at random and invariably pitted teams made up of heels and faces. The main event, there was the 60-man battle royal made up of competitors that featured on the card, and with a final four of Flair, Austin, Sting and Vader, it was Vader that won in the end to win the Battle Bowl prize.
And that will wrap up the news for this month. Now what we're going to do is cut back to a pre-taped segment that Colin recorded earlier today, which will look at the steroid indictment to give you all the facts and news that you need to know.
Vince McMahon and Titan Sports were both this month indicted on two counts of steroid law violations. Both Mr. McMahon, the individual, and Titan Sports, the company, were charged with identically worded statements, which were conspiracy to distribute anabolic steroids and to defraud the United States Food and Drug Administration during the period from 1985 to February of 1991. Legal possession of anabolic steroids with intent to distribute on October the 24th, 1989. The charges against Vince McMahon carry a maximum prison sentence of 8 years and a maximum fine of $500,000. The charges to Titan Sports each carry a maximum fine of $500,000, along with the forfeiture of Titan Towers, estimated to be worth $9.5 million. The indictments are the culmination of a 2-year investigation by the US Justice Department. This all leads back to the conviction of Dr. George Zahorian III, a surgeon who was convicted of illegal distribution of steroids to WWF wrestlers and Vince McMahon without justified medical cause. Deliberations on the Zahorian case took just 3 hours at trial in 1991, and he is currently serving a 3-year prison sentence. The charges to McMahon claim that he and others knowingly and intentionally conspired to defraud the US Federal Drug Administration. It says the conspiracy was to, quote, unlawfully provide WWF wrestling performers with steroids to enhance their size and musculature and therefore increase the ticket sales for WWF exhibitions and the profits to Titan and McMahon, end quote. McMahon denied the charges, claiming they were an attempt to make him responsible for the actions of Zahorian. He pleaded not guilty to all charges, was released on a $250,000 bond, and a trial date has been set for the 2nd of May next year.
Craig, I think there's a limit to what we can necessarily analyse about all this, given how many facts there are involved, but what can we say about what the steroid indictment means now for the WWF and what it might mean going forward?
It's certainly very interesting. I mean, we've certainly seen the shift from the roided up guys, the bodybuilder-esque physiques that the WWF featured so heavily during the 80s to the sort of smaller guys, your Bret Harts, your Ric Flairs have held the title more recently. So I think that shift's already sort of taken place, but I think the longer term stuff's all a bit up in the air. I mean, I can only imagine that there's a contingency plan put in place by the WWF in case the result ends up not being in Vince's favour. But I think that the main shift will see the continued focus on smaller superstars being built up, and certainly less of the bodybuilder style performers of old.
Colin?
Well, I think you can clearly see that they have shifted their focus. And you got to think that at some part it is down to this steroid saga. Would maybe even a year, 2 years ago, Bret Hart be considered for the main event when you have guys like Davey Boy Smith, he's a big guy. Hogan at the time, he liked to bodybuild, and he'd be, and if he tells you that he never took steroids, well, we know he did. I can't really get my head around what could happen if Vince is found guilty, if WWF are found guilty. I mean, the fact that they could even lose Titan Towers is mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, I think with regards on screen, I mean, is it one guy that neither of you two have mentioned is Yokozuna, who of course is the champion at the moment. I mean, do we think that Yokozuna is almost in place just because he is the opposite of everything that has come before? Like, all the focus on the company has been about, are they giving steroids out to some of their performers? And do you think, Colin, there might be a case of saying that Yokozuna is almost there as the antithesis of everything that's come before?
Well, there's no doubt that he is the polar opposite of the bodybuilder physique. But I don't think it'd be fair to him to put him in with that. I mean, for his size and his look, I mean, Yokozuna is a great, great athlete considering he's a 500-pound man. Some of the stuff he can do is amazing. So it's maybe not fair to bunch him in with the steroid stuff, but I can see where you're coming from.
Great.
I think we can certainly all agree that Yokozuna isn't on steroids.
Well, if he is, they're not very good.
Yeah, he's certainly not combining the steroids with the arm curls. But like Colin says, it is something that's clearly the shift's been already made. I think there are maybe sort of slight issues regarding Lex Luger, if there's a didn't he, but In general terms, they've moved from your Ultimate Warriors, your Hulk Hogan's, even on your undercards, people like the Warlord, etc., through to the smaller guys, your Macho Mattins, your Bret Harts, your Razor Ramones, people like that, that clearly aren't roided up. So that procedure's been put in place. I think the bigger thing and the most noticeable thing would be the removal of Vince McMahon from his commentary position on Raw and being such a prominent figure on WWF television if the court case doesn't go his way. But I guess that's something we're probably going to come back to at a later date.
Colin, with regards to Lex Luger, does this possibly present the best explanation as to why Luger wasn't given the championship at SummerSlam?
You could definitely make that argument, but I would go with the fact that he's not good enough to hold the WWF Championship rather than the steroid case being the reason why he didn't get it.
I mean, it is interesting, and I think as we say, and one thing probably to parallel this, and I'll probably certainly come to it when we cover the WCW stuff later in the show, but is how in the WWF, and in part because of this, but we're seeing the shift, as we say, towards some of the smaller guys, some of the guys who are more notably less well built. And yet you look in to WCW and everyone up there, everyone in the main event of that company is clearly very muscular. One way or another, I'm not going to sit here and say they're all on something or something like that, but there is very much a trend that in WCW, to get nearer that main event, you've got to be bigger. And Craig, do you think it might have an equal effect on WCW with regards to how they maybe choose their performers going forward?
My initial worry here has to be the fact that we've not really said the word allegedly very much in this discussion on steroids. But in terms of the WCW stuff, I think if it does prove to be the case that Vince goes down as a result of the steroid stuff, then it's not a massive leap of faith to believe that glances would then be certainly put across towards WCW and how they're operating and who their main superstars are. So it does seem a little bit baffling that whilst all this air is around Vince McMahon, that they would be putting guys that have apparently, allegedly, physiques as a result of stuff other than spending a power of time in the gym.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not sure how much more there is we can add to all that in terms of wait and see, almost, in terms of let's see how this develops. And I think from our point of view, we can certainly report what goes on in the coming months. But I think in terms of just watching and seeing a sea change, if there is one, in terms of the sort of guys that the WWF are pushing, and maybe WCW as well, and also kind of their recruitment in terms of the guys they look at going forward, that could be very interesting to see how that goes on. But I think for the moment, at least, we'll wrap that up there, and we'll move on to Survivor Series. And Colin, if you could read out the card and the results. There have been a number of changes from this card compared to where we had it last month, and I think I'll fill in the gaps as we go through each match.
Absolutely. I mean, there's been a lot of changes that we're going through over a little while. Right, we started off with the team of Marty Jannetty, Randy Savage, Razor Ramon and the 1-2-3 Kid for taking on the team of IRS, Diesel, Rick Martel and Adam Bomb. The survivors of that match, the 1-2-3 Kid and Marty Jannetty. We had the Hart family, Brett, Owen, Bruce and Keith, accompanied by Stu Hart, defeating Shawn Michaels and his Knights. So we touched on that earlier. Shawn Michaels, the Red Knight, the Blue Knight and the Black Knight. The sole survivors there were Brett, Bruce and Keith. We had the Heavenly Bodies, Jimmy Del Rey and Tom Pritchard, defeat the Rock and Roll Express in a tag team match for the SMW Tag Team Championships. We then had a largely forgettable Survivor Series match between the Four Doinks and the team of Head Shrinkers, Bastion Booger and Bam Bam Bigelow. If I told you that the survivors of that match were Mabel, Mo, Luke and Butch, you'd probably be asking where Doink was. Well, we're still asking that question ourselves. Then in the main event, we had the All-Americans, Lex Luger, The Undertaker, Rick Steiner and Scott Steiner, defeat the Foreign Fanatics, which were the team of Yokozuna, Crush, Ludwig Borger and Quebecca Juck. The sole survivor there being Lex Luger after pinning Ludwig Borger.
Colin, what were your overall thoughts on this show?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of the Survivor Series format. I don't find that the matches themselves hold any real relevance or significance to ongoing storylines. It seems you introduce people that don't need to be there. I mean, if you look at the very first match, we have Razor Ramon's team. You could say Ramon had something going with Rick Martel after beating him for the Intercontinental title. You could argue he's got something with Diesel as well, but other than that, the other guys were just sort of thrown in there. It was an okay show. I've seen worse. I've seen a lot better. The best match of the night. Well, I'd probably, just for name value, give it to the main event, but I'd argue that the tag team match with the SNW tag titles was probably one of the better matches of the night, just because it wasn't such a mess, basically.
Greg?
Until Colin's last remark, I was going to disagree with absolutely everything that he'd said. He's right, the best match was probably the Smoky Mountain Wrestling tag team title match, although it was hampered slightly by the fact that the fact that the crowd didn't really know either tag team and certainly didn't really care about either tag team. I would disagree with his analysis of the opening match. I thought it was quite a good fun opening encounter for a pay-per-view, with the uniqueness of the fact that you're mid-card champion type people were eliminated first, and it was the jobbers that had survived after in what was the fifth Survivor Series. It was a sort of more unique twist. I quite liked it. The Macho Man and Crush stuff's obviously going to be quite interesting, but it was good to see the Macho Man there. I thought it was good entertaining opening. The Heart match against the Michaels and the Knights was awful. It was far too long, and the fact that the crowd really didn't have the buy-in. I mean, Lawler had spent the previous months attacking the Hart family and Bret Hart himself, so this match was all aimed at the idea of the Hart family rattling through the Knights and then getting their hands on Lawler, so it didn't have the same value.
I was going to move on to my own point, but as a quick sidebar, apparently Terry Funk was going to be one of the Knights, and then pulled out before the show when he found out what they're going to do with him, for what that's worth. I thought the best match of the night was the opener, which I think we'll come to in a sec, but I think that's more an indictment of how weak the rest of the card was on the whole. And yeah, for me, the main event was okay, but the middle I thought was flat, and I'm going to kind of disagree on the tag team match. I kind of thought that, like, it got a bit convoluted towards the end in kind of how they were putting it together and all the stuff that was going on outside. And the Hart family match was way too long.
It was painfully too long.
It went over half an hour. I don't understand how they could give that half an hour, especially when you had Bruce and Keith, who hadn't wrestled for years.
I mean, I think as a whole, I think this was largely a card where just not enough guys on the card were over. I mean, the reaction of the Undertaker compared to the rest of the card was striking. And I think that was possibly a concern when you think that Undertaker's not particularly a guy that, when you compare to how much they pushed Lex Luger in the last 4 or 5 months, necessarily someone who's got that much TV time. But we'll start with the opener, Colin. I thought this actually, like, I know you say that, I know it's been said that maybe, you know, there wasn't a lot to this match storyline wise, and maybe this was kind of just, let's get a lot of the guys who we haven't really got a lot for in one match, but I thought this was by far the best because it was the one that was booked most logically, in the sense that they weren't trying to protect anyone, they weren't trying to tell anything too complicated. They just told a good, 4-on-4 wrestling storyline, and as I said, I thought this was the best match of the night.
Well, they did try to put a little bit of storyline into it in the build-up on the Raws going in with the dissension between the heel team. You had a few arguments on Raw in the lead-ups to Survivor Series, but ultimately it wasn't ever going to amount to anything. Then you had the change that was alluded to this on the Raw before Survivor Series, that they thought that they might see Mr. Perfect step aside for Randy Savage, which ultimately did happen. They never really explained why Mr. Perfect did step aside for Randy Savage. They just said, this has happened, here he comes.
Because it would make a lot more sense if Randy Savage had inserted himself into the main event.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a bigger name. I think he probably had the kind of pop that The Undertaker got in the main event. You could argue that Savage gets a similar one.
And he's the only guy who's close.
Yeah, he really was. I understand why you'd want to have him on the card, but there was no real explanation why. Why did Mr. Perfect want to step aside? Really?
I don't know. Oh, it's a good answer to that. Just to kind of fill in the blanks in terms of where the storyline went, Randy Savage was in the opener and then Crush walked out. So I think Randy Savage got counted out. And then in the main event, the exact opposite thing happened. Randy Savage came out and Crush got himself eliminated. Craig, what was your thoughts on that and the rest of the opener?
I thought it was really good fun. It's that great opening encounter that just gets the crowd going. Perhaps if you look at it on a storyline point, it's not going to really lead to a terrible amount. But I just thought it in terms of the talent that was there, it did as much as it could. And on the point of your discussion of how over people were, I thought the crowd gave Razor Ramon quite a good reaction. It's not sort of Legion of Doom-esque pop that he got from the crowd, but compared to what was to follow, he did get quite a good reaction, especially the stuff at the start of the match with the listen to me stuff. But it was good fun opener, good knockabout stuff. Yeah, I quite liked it. I'd have probably given that, maybe I was slightly being generous, because I do have a big bias towards Survivor Series, but I did give that a 7 out of 10.
It was one of those, it was kind of like a match that didn't really have much context, and often they can be the best because you're not really interested in protecting anyone or necessarily forwarding that many storylines. So you just tell in embryo, in a kind of, in a closed shop, a very nice wrestling story. And obviously that also intertwined itself later in the show with Randy and Savage and Crush. Colin, moving on to the Hart family versus, Shawn Michaels and his Knights. And I guess the main thing coming out of all this was obviously, well, Jerry Lawler being replaced, which I think was a huge blow given that I think the WWF really thought that this, if it wasn't like as equal to the main event, it was kind of 1A in terms of the importance of it on the card. And you almost kind of wonder what might have been with this match had Lawler been in it, but given how they formatted it, like, you would think the in-ring action with Shawn Michaels would probably be slightly better, but it didn't make for a good match.
No, I mean, it's a tough one, because obviously you had the legal problems with Jerry Lawler. They couldn't have him on the card for obvious reasons. They decided that Shawn Michaels was going to take his place, and they threw him in at the deep end. I think you had something on the Raw before Survivor Series where they tried to get Shawn putting down the Hart, you know, trying to get some heat on him as regards to knocking Brett's family. But the match just, it wasn't good to watch. You won't say that very often about a Bret Hart match. But it went on so long. Like I said, it went on over half an hour. In the end, it timed the longest match of the night. Well, you think that the main event had the likes of Luger, Undertaker, the Steiners, Yokozuna. It was the longest match of the night, and it was the most painful match. Well, I say the most painful match of the night. We haven't got to the Doink match yet.
Oh, God. At least that was 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Craig?
You see, this match, would have worked quite well had it been Lawler. You can imagine that if it had been Lawler that was leading the Knights team, the match probably would have had the same sort of length, but the Hart family would have went through each night one at a time and just left, I imagine, probably at least three, if not all, of the Hart family against Lawler, and then it would have proceeded to be a massive beatdown on Lawler. It would have had the crowd on their feet. They'd have been lapping it up as the Hart family got inch by inch closer to getting their hands on Lawler. But the fact that, obviously, for the issues that we've discussed, he was removed from the match, it really hurt it. And it just didn't seem, there didn't seem to be any point in Michaels there. And as such, the crowd really didn't care about it. And it was just given, it was afforded far too much time, considering that the whole storyline build-up was spoiled by what had happened.
You can imagine, actually, like, you can imagine if it was Lawler instead of Michaels throughout the whole match, doing whatever he could to avoid any sort of altercation with any of the Harts. And when the final night was eliminated and he would have been left with, Owen got eliminated. Even with just Brett, Bruce and Keith, Lawler would have been stuck, and crowd, like you said, Craig, would have absolutely lapped it up.
And I think Lawler as well would have done everything during that match to stoke that crowd up when it got a bit quiet as well in the kind of middle of the match. So again, I think we have to temper everything we say here by saying that losing Lawler in this match, you basically just pulled the plug out of the bath. And it's like, well, we can save what we can, but it's not going to be anywhere near as good as it was if he was there. I thought it was a little disingenuous trying to imply that Shawn Michaels, because they basically just tried to smudge out Lawler's name and replace it with Michaels. It's like just erasing it and putting a different name in there in terms of he's been saying all this bad stuff for months and months, which wasn't remotely convincing. But I thought they did the best they could with it. It's not a circumstance you're going to have very often. There's no good way out of that, particularly when it's such a crucial match. It's not like you could pull it from the card and save it for another time. You know, what would you replace it with? Another interesting thing which I haven't touched on yet was the presence of Ray Coombs, who was the host of Family Feud, which is a TV show. Coombs came out, cut a very long promo. I thought it was too long. Some largely very bad humour in amongst it as well. then he joined Vince McMahon and Bobby Heenan on commentary, and I actually thought as a commentator you did okay. You got a little overexcited at times. But my frustration with the whole thing was the amount of times that they referred to, or it was Bruce or Keith in the ring, it's like, oh, is he the firefighter? Oh, no, he's the school teacher. They just kept telling awful jokes over and over again. And I thought that kind of undercut it, because, you know, I mean, not that Bruce and Keith necessarily look that tough anyway. They look like almost kind of like ordinary human beings, which in many ways they are, just in wrestling gear. But I thought that kind of undercut things as well. That kind of took away from the seriousness of the match. But again, yeah, it was too long. But the one thing we haven't really touched on, I think there are positives we can take from it, is the potential heel turn of Owen, which I think actually, if you frame that, you isolate that part of it, just a bit at the end with Owen getting frustrated and everything that happened with, because the entire Hart family was there. Stu was kind of sat down outside the ring, and then they had all the other Hart family at ringside as well. Colin, what did you think of how that bit specifically went down and the possibility of an Owen heel turn?
I think they started to allude to Owen's heel turn on the Survivor Series extravaganza before. You would have seen highlights on the Raw before. He came out in a match between Brett and Yokozuna for the WWF Championship. They didn't really explain why he was in the aisleway slapping hands with the fans. Then the next thing you know, he was in the ring beating on Yokozuna. Brett had I think there was an attempted salt to the eyes, like a la WrestleMania 9. But Owen got in the ring, started waving on Yokozuna, and Brett got disqualified. Yeah, they didn't really expect, I think they tried to pass it off as Owen was excited, thinking that Brett had won the title. Okay, if that's what they want to say. But come the match, yeah, that's probably, it's, it's an interesting idea having Owen turn heel and possibly feuding with Brett. I mean, it's brother versus brother. It could make some money. It could.
Great.
I always worry about the idea of just turning someone for the sake of it, and the idea that Owen isn't terribly over, no one really cares that much about him. It's difficult to suggest from that he would go from being a face that nobody really cared about to being a heel that folk would care about. That would be my issue. Certainly on the face of it, but obviously the family stuff makes it slightly different. But of what was a 30-minute snore fest, yes, the teasing of a Owen heel turn is certainly the only redeeming feature of this match.
Yeah, and I think it's... I think for Owen, it's probably a good thing. I mean, I think ideally you'd probably say he probably makes a better baby face just because of one, how he wrestles, and he's not the greatest talker, you can't necessarily imagine him being a great heel promo necessarily. I mean, I almost wonder whether this might have been a heel turn that might have linked into Jerry Lawler in some way, shape or form. Maybe like Lawler could have like taken Owen under his wing. Almost, or that kind of thing. I mean, I'm fantasy booking here almost, but I mean, maybe that could have been somewhere where they could have taken it, or maybe where they could take it. Maybe that actually is an interesting idea, having kind of Lawler, kind of managing Owen if they want to go down that route. I mean, I'm not necessarily sure they will, because we've got no idea as and if and when Lawler's going to return. But it's intriguing. It's something to do with Owen that they haven't been doing with Owen in recent months.
You could say, what you said earlier, Craig, about Owen being a face that nobody really cared about to then being a heel that people would get behind and hate. If they're going to turn him, one of the best possible ways at the moment would be to have him hit Brett from behind. Brett is one of the most over guys in the company, so that would instantly get him some heat, more heat than he would probably get than, say, trying to push him as a massive baby face.
Yeah, and I think it's going to help as well that, you know, it's a nice story that Owen is frustrated by all of the attention being on Brett. It's a story that makes sense. It's not just a brother turning on brother for the sake of it. You know, they've introduced the Hart family over a number of months. Brett is a former WWF champion, so they've introduced all these puzzle pieces into play. And it does make sense that Owen would be frustrated. And they could have some good matches as well. Which is another exciting thing that we might get down the road as well. We'll move on to the Rock and Roll Express against the Heavenly Bodies match. I think this was probably a better match than I might make it out to be, but Craig, I think the main problem was that just none of the crowd cared, and I don't know whether it's necessarily something that we can hold against the acts involved, but it was almost just like, well, it was a match that kind of felt detached from everything else on the show, just because it was for a championship that nobody really knows anything about. Smoky Mountain Wrestling, what does that mean to your average WWF fan? And the two teams were like, we saw the Heavenly Bodies at SummerSlam, but we haven't really seen them since. The Rock and Roll Express have been knocking around, but I mean, Craig, it kind of felt to me like a match that was, if you'd have watched it out of context, you would have said good match, but when you put everything in place, it kind of loses its edge.
Yeah, absolutely. If you played the match to someone, they'd have been like, oh, that's classic 80s territory wrestling. That's the sort of stuff that tag team wrestling's all about. But putting a 2-on-2 match in a card filled with the rest of it with 4-on-4 elimination matches makes... separates it in that level, and then the fact that the Rock and Roll Express, the WWF crowd have no sort of connection with whatsoever, and as great as the Heavenly Bodies are, and they are absolutely fantastic, it's still not enough to bring this one back in, and it is a shame, because in watching this, that this is my match of the evening for the Survivor Series card. I give this a good 7.5 out of 10. But only if you give it a 7.5 out of 10 and watch the match. Sorry, only if you watch the match with the sound muted. Otherwise, you hear how little the crowd care, and that brings down the rating somewhat.
Colin?
Like I said, I think it was the best match of the night. the Rock and Roll Express are a fantastic tag team from the territories. I think like they've put two tag teams from SNW in front of a WWF audience. They're not invested at all in an SNW tag team title match for starters. And I definitely think that the finish was completely lost on them as well, because I'm not sure many of the people in attendance knew that in SNW, being thrown over the top rope is a disqualification. That happened in this match, but because it was on a WWF show, they said that they were under WWF rules and the Heavenly Bodies got the win.
Yeah, and I think one good feature was that they transversed to having Jim Ross and Gorilla Monsoon, who were doing WWF radio commentary for the evening, to call this match. And I get the sense that was because Vince and Heenan knew nothing about, or not much about either side, and Ross was probably in a better position to call that. That probably helped, because Ross was able to at least fill in some of the blanks for the TV audience. Again, not that it helps anyone in attendance. But again, as I think, out of context, yeah, a good match, but it was just kind of flat. Now, nothing compared to the next match, Colin. The Four Doinks, which was Bushwhackers, Luke and Butch, and Men on a Mission against Bastian Booger, Bam Bam Bigelow and the Head Shrinkers. Colin, what was this? I've no idea.
Where was Doink? The actual Doink. They spent the month with Doink tormenting Bam Bam Bigelow. And they're right, we're going to have a Survivor Series match. Who are my partners going to be, Doink said. Well, eventually over the weeks on things like Superstars, he revealed Doink, and then Doink, and then Doink. And in the video thing, it was Doink. It was him four times messing around on the screen. Then come the match, Doink's intro starts, and then it cuts into the Bushwhacker music. And you think, okay, the Bushwhackers are going to be two of the Doinks. Fair enough. They come out in stupid Doink makeup with stupid Doink wigs. And Doink's music's intro starts again. And then you get the Men on the Mission music. And Oscar comes out rapping with a Doink get-up. And out comes Mabel and Mo with Doink. And you quickly realise we're not actually going to get Doink. I don't understand how that works. You can't tell me that there's going to be a Doink match and not actually have Doink.
Great.
Throughout the events that I watch, I do try and take as much notes as I can, just so I can at least give a little bit of analysis on it. I would like to read you, and honestly, I'm going to quote verbatim my notes from this match. Match 4. Shit.
Well said. Well, I've also did the same. Likewise as Craig, I do take some notes of this. My notes was, well, not quite as good as Craig, but I just got crap comedy written down. And Craig, this is all this match was. There was food involved. There was a tricycle at some point. There was banana peels. There was people getting distracted by chicken.
At some point, Tim Booker not go for a pin in favour of eating some turkey.
Yes, exactly that. I don't know, but the worst thing was it wasn't even good comedy. I can take comedy in wrestling, however misplaced, and I think this was misplaced in like the match before the main event, but it wasn't funny. It was just like, what the hell is this?
They had a backstage interview before the match. They had the Head Shrinkers and Booger and Bigelow, and the Head Shrinkers and Booger were going to town on some turkey carcasses. And if you look at Bam Bam in the background, he's sort of sitting there and thinking, what am I doing here? Why have they put me with the Head Shrinkers and Bastian Booger in it? Why? I feel sorry for him, because he's more than capable of having a very, very good match. But they've put him in this comedy segment because of Doink, and then don't put Doink in the match. I don't understand it.
I don't want to waste any more time on the show on this match. Don't watch it. Just don't. Moving on to the main event. This was somewhat better, although not that was difficult. Lex Luger, The Undertaker and the Steiners defeated Yokozuna, Ludwig Borger, Crush and Jacques Rougeau. Crush replacing Pierre of the Quebecers, who was elbowed out of action by Lex Luger in not particularly the most babyface move I've ever seen, to use your steel plate in your elbow to knock out your opponent. But it did kind of explain, given that Undertaker was replacing Tatanka, I think. It's getting confusing. So we ended up with crushing this match, Al Undertaker, compared to where we were advertised last month. Colin, this was good, but I think it in part suffered from a lack of crowd heat, and I think it in part suffered just because nobody other than The Undertaker, who didn't get into this match until a good 20 minutes in, really was over.
Yeah. The first real sign of life from the crowd for me was when we saw Randy Savage come out to try and get at Crush. Somebody that's not even involved in the match getting some life out of the crowd. I think we had Rick Steiner was the first elimination. He was gone within 5 minutes, which, when you consider the other matches, I think we in the other matches, bar the Doink debacle.
It was the quickest. I've got time here. He was pinned in 3 minutes 30 seconds.
When you think, I think the other ones went about 10 minutes. The Knights match with the Hearts and the opener, you went about 10 minutes before there was an elimination. Which I was surprised that it went that quickly. But I think we had, so you had a Crush got counted out. You had Undertaker and Yokozuna. They got counted out. Undertaker was by far the most over. One of the most interesting things coming out of that for me, they looked like they were trying to build something with Taker and Yoko. When Yokozuna was confronted with the Undertaker, he went wide-eyed, and it looked like that he was terrified, wanting to get away from Taker as well. So I wonder if that's, and the count out might be leading to something down the road.
Craig?
Yeah, Colin's absolutely right. That's the redeeming feature of this match. I thought this was pretty average, to be honest. I still don't quite understand or can even slightly justify Ludwig Borga's position anywhere near the main event. In fact, I'm not even convinced I can justify Ludwig Borga's inclusion on the roster. Everything that was bad about this match occurred when he was in it. It was just quite a poor affair.
And he was in Taker, it till the end, which probably explains it.
Yep, no, Taker v. Yoko is very interesting. I'm keen to see how that develops, but this is just... in terms of a go-home main event, the crowd go home happy because the good guys triumph. It's still poor.
It's not just the good guys triumph. Don't forget that as soon as Lex Luger had pinned Ludwig Borga, it started to snow. And then Santa Claus came out.
That's right. Thanksgiving Eve. Santa Claus. Wait a minute. That's not right.
That's not right, is it?
I'm not great at my American pastimes, but I'm pretty sure we're a month too far in front.
And that wasn't even the most puzzling thing about this pay-per-view. That probably says quite a lot.
True. Not by a long shot. I kind of share. It wasn't that bad. I think in part it was kind of the... I think for your average fan who wasn't necessarily that invested in the tag match, I think you've seen three, for one reason or another, flat matches in a row. The Hart match went on too long. The tag match was good, but you can't work reinvested in it. The Doink match was horrendous. And I think it's like, that's 2 hours after, well, about an hour and a half after kind of the end of the first match, which I think was the best match on the card. And you get to this, and I think the one weakness of this is that you kind of sit in and go, okay, I've got probably 6 or 7 falls here, probably 5 or 6 where I can really think, right, I might get close to the end of the match. The crowd sat in. Undertaker, the only guy who was over, as I say, didn't get into the match until 20 minutes in. And then he got eliminated, like, not long after as well, as I said, with the double count. He was in the match for a very short period of time. And then, Colin, is this an indictment? Can we write off Luger? I mean, I know he got the clean pin, so I guess they're going to carry on with him, but he did not get a reaction anywhere close to the level of push they've given him in the last 4 or 5 months.
I think I touched on it after SummerSlam. Luger's push has not worked slightly well at all. I can't see how they can continue trying to push. I know they want the American hero after Hulk Hogan's left, but I'm sorry, Lex Luger is not it, and the fans have not taken to it at all.
Craig?
Other than the Undertaker, though, who else are the fans really caring about? That's probably the bigger issue, and without someone else that's going to step up as the guy that the crowd are getting behind, then it probably looks like they're just going to continue down the path of Luger. They've invested in it both time and money, clearly. So unless someone else jumps out from nowhere, then it's difficult to look past the continuation of Luger's push as the new Hogan.
Yeah, and there's I don't really want to go necessarily over too much old ground, because in the August show we did kind of discuss that in detail, but it's not like there's not particularly a great list of other guys you can really push in the place. Undertaker, yeah, could work, and that might be where they're going. But it kind of felt to me like, well, they gave Luger the clean victory here.
That was Borger's first loss as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On TV.
Yes. So they gave Luger that, and so it's kind of like, well, they're probably still going with him. But if he's not stuck by now, I can't imagine pushing him for a few more months is going to get him necessarily that much more over, because if he was going to be over, he would have been over at SummerSlam. That was they pushed him to the moon, and as we said earlier, maybe there were reasons why they didn't ultimately kind of kick him over the line. But 3 months on, he's over to a degree. I mean, he's an asset to them, but I almost wonder whether in the next few months, maybe after WrestleMania, maybe when. Because, I mean, they kind of got to continue going with this. I mean, maybe they could just pull the plug completely. But, you know, he got the win over Yokozuna at SummerSlam. So, I mean, in many ways, he's the uncrowned champion in the sense that, you know, he won by count out. And so he's kind of almost got that entitlement to a rematch. But, yeah, for me, if it was going to work, it would have worked by now, and it hasn't. And so I think they've got to quickly, because, I mean, and we're going to come on to the WCW stuff in a minute. As much as we're going to sit here and pick so many holes in how WCW's one being run, two things are going backstage and how they're booking their TV, WCW has a way more over main event roster than WWF has by a distance. And I think that's a major concern as we go into our WCW coverage now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would like to just make one point, the Luger stuff. You say about how over he is, I think the question Mark remains over the fact of how on the ball the Vince and WWF generally are going to be based on the whole steroid stuff. I think that might play a part. I mean, I think their eyes are going to be on that case rather than the main event picture. So I think I can't see Luger not remaining in position for a little bit longer.
Let's do our scores for Survivor Series. Craig, what did you think about Survivor Series and a score rating?
I gave it a 4 out of 10. I thought it was it was hurt slightly by the fact that Lola wasn't there. There was some really bad storylines, and it displayed more than any other pay-per-view this year the lack of superstar talent on the WWF roster. So yeah, 4 out of 10.
Colin?
I'm in agreement again. I've scored it 4 out of 10. The horrible doink match, the overly long Family Feud match, and I'll throw in as well the changes as well, the Randy Savage put in, Shawn Michaels put in, then you have on the All-Americans, the Undertaker and Crush. There was just too much changed. Some of the stuff just wasn't up to par here. 4 stars.
Yeah, no, Well, 4 out of 10, I assume, Colin.
4 out of 10, of course, sorry.
4 stars. I was going to say, you're overdoing it there. A lot of negatives and then 8 out of 10. Well, then. No, I give it a 3. The opener was good. The tag title match just had no heat. The Lawler... Well, not Lawler, but mainly the problem. The Hart-Michaels match, again, it does kind of feel slightly unfair to just completely chop them for that, because, you know, what really could they do? But that was bad, and it was too long, one way or another. God, the Doink match, I just hope I forget it after tonight, because I don't particularly want to recall that again. The main event was decent, but again, it just dragged. It's like, I want to be able to enjoy wrestling, and God, this month more than it, we only got Battle Bowl later in the show. It just wasn't a good night of wrestling, and I kind of figured, forget all the stuff with the storyline. You can always deliver, if your roster is right, you can always deliver a good night of wrestling, whether the booking decisions are good or bad. We saw that with kind of Halloween Havoc last month. The booking was bad, but the action was good. And you can kind of, you can always forgive the guys in the ring, because they're the guys that ultimately we rate this stuff on. But I just, yeah, 3 out of 10. The opener was decent. There were some nice peaks in it, but ultimately it just dragged a bit too long, for me. Right, moving on to WCW, I think we're going to have to start with the news of the Sid Vicious Arn Anderson incident. And like Colin did before, I am now going to read a similar length kind of report. A lot of facts here, so you've got to use my voice for a couple of minutes, and then we'll drop off, so a bit more discussion. But Sid Vicious and Arn Anderson were involved in a fight during WCW's European tour at the back end of October, which resulted in both men receiving numerous stab wounds. Neither have returned to television since, although at the current time of recording, both still remain with the company. The incident happened in Blackburn, England, where the WCW crew had just come off a 3-hour coach trip before arriving at their hotel. Things would start off between the two at the hotel bar. The following is a summation of the version of story from numerous sources, or the facts up until the point where they get to their hotel room is apparently largely similar, according to Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer. Apparently it all began with Sid Vicious bragging about how he'd held at the WCW for a major raise, rumored to be up to $600,000 per year in return for agreeing to lose to Sting at Halloween Havoc earlier in October. With both men drinking, Vicious was bragging also about his $100,000 pay increase, while Anderson the previous year had to take a similarly sized cut. Vicious argued that it was time for the older talent on the roster, like Anderson and Ric Flair, to step aside, that the company would be built around him going forward. Things began to get heated and the pair were eventually split in order to go to their hotel rooms. A while later, Vicious went to Arn's room with a piece of broken off furniture. Stories get a little bit muddled from here, but this is kind of the stripped down version of what we can amalgamate. But one way or another, Vince and Arn ended up in a fight in his hotel room. Arn grabbed a dull pair of scissors, and in the fight that ensued, it said that Vicious received 4 stab wounds to the chest. These were dull tip scissors, so nothing hugely life-threatening, nothing massively dangerous, but obviously, you know, scissor stabs are what they are. Vicious was able to grab the scissors and stab Anderson a total of 20 times, mostly in the shoulders and back, but one dangerously close to his eye and another in his throat. It is said that Anderson lost a pint and a half of blood, but both men were able to return to America within the week, having been to hospital. On TV, the Clash of the Champions PPV, which we're going to come on to in a little bit, Anderson wasn't mentioned. Sid, who was lined up to team with Flair in a match taped for WCW Saturday night that had already happened against Vader and Steve Austin. So Flair, in the promo to fit Clash of the Champions into storyline before Saturday night, had to endorse Sid on TV. Off screen, it is said that while no official decision has been made, Anderson and Vicious are both suspended without pay. It's suspected that Vicious will ultimately be fired. With regards to the storyline TV tapings, although there was due to be another batch of worldwide tapings, it's actually already happened, it was a week or so ago, it was slated that Vicious was going to indeed win the World Heavyweight Championship from Vader and be the front man of WCW going forward. Now Vader will face Ric Flair at Starrcade next month. Now, I am going to take a drink. Craig, what are your thoughts on this story?
It's pretty incredible. It doesn't sort of paint Sid Vicious in a particularly good light, considering the rumours surrounding his release from the WWF the year before. It's kind of difficult to see where his next destination is. I guess it sort of really leaves the USWA, ECW, or I guess some sort of small independent. He does
Japan, maybe? Would they take him in Japan?
Well, he's a big man, so potentially, but it doesn't leave Vicious with an enormous amount of options, and he doesn't come out of the story on the face of it looking terribly good.
Colin?
Well, it's an incredible story, really. I mean, Sid Sid really doesn't come off very well at all. I mean, despite the fact that he appears to have stabbed Arn Anderson reportedly 20-odd times with scissors, I mean, obviously he's not going to come off looking brilliant, but he's not giving himself a good reputation. Say, like Craig said, the way he's rumoured to have left the WWF. You can't imagine. I mean, I know the guys have been on a long journey and they've been drinking. It's just, but to escalate to a point where they're trying to stab each other, I mean, it's just...
Well, they were stabbing each other.
It's ridiculous.
It's hardly softball, is it?
Unbelievable.
No, and I think that looking at this, I mean, the temptation and seem to be the story behind all this is that a lot of the WCW roster were siding with Arn Anderson, I think to the point where they said that, I think whether it was the Clash or Battle Bar, I assume it was the Clash because they must have returned in time for that. But there were rumours that apparently the roster were going to walk out unless they fired Sid, and obviously they haven't done that, but I get the sense that's probably coming. But I mean, Colin, as we motioned to about kind of Sid's departure from the WWF last year and now this, I mean, he's done, isn't he? I mean, that's it. I mean, like, after all this, why would WCW keep him around? I can't imagine they would. And why would anyone else employ him? He's not worth the trouble. And he's not, you can get guys in wrestling who have a lot of flaws and have a lot of kind of, you know, attitude problems in terms of they've got a short fuse and things like that. But you tolerate them because of what they bring to your product. I don't think Sid ticks many of those boxes. I don't think he's earning that kind of paycheck if he's truly getting that amount. And I don't think he's the guy who you could invest in or would want to. There's not enough upside to justify the downside.
I suppose, like you've reported, they were going to put the world title on. What does Sid really offer? He's got a look. There's no doubt about it. He's a big dude and he looks the part.
You can understand why people would have gone with it.
Yes, you can understand just looking at him why he might be one of the top men just by looks. That when you put him in the ring, his technical, his wrestling ability, questionable. His promo skills are very questionable. Put this on top of it and the way he left WWF as well, what's left for him? Where's he going to go? What kind of living could he make if he now is fired from WCW and having burnt his bridges with WWF? It's absolutely ridiculous to think that he's put himself in that position. Nobody's going to want to work with him now.
I mean, Craig, I almost want, have they, I dodged a bullet, I'm not sure whether that's a good expression, but at WCW you kind of almost lucked into a good situation here in the sense that I think with Vader, they're in, yeah, we're going to talk about Vader when we come to the cards that we're going to cover later in the show. But are they almost dodged a bullet in the sense that now, if assuming Sid just gets the chop, they can focus on someone else, whether they like it or not?
I think that's probably the case. I admire Colin for being able to sit on the fence so strongly, but Sid Vicious offered nothing in the ring and even less on the mic, so the idea of him being a sort of credible main eventer was pretty remote. So the idea that they were able to get out of any contractual obligation they had to him through his own actions has to be seen as a godsend from their point of view.
Right, well, we'll move on to the Clash. Colin, if you'd like to enlighten us with the results.
Okay, we had Rick Rude defending the WCW International Championship against Road Warrior Hawk, ended in a double count-out. The Shockmaster defeated the Equalizer. Lord Steven Regal defeated Johnny B. Badd in a WCW World Television Championship match. Steve Austin defeated Brian Pillman. Dustin Rhodes, the United States champion, defeated Paul Orndorff. The Nasty Boys defended the tag team titles against the team of Sting and Davey Boy Smith, with the Nasty Boys coming out on top. And in the main event, we had Ric Flair versus Vader for the World Heavyweight Championship. Ric Flair wins by disqualification. That's the line they're going with anyway.
Yeah, we'll come to that finish as when we get there. Wow, that was bad, even by WCW standards. Craig, we'll start with the opener, what they're this month calling the international title. God knows what will be next month. Road Warrior Hawk, reportedly injured, and visibly so. What was the point in sending him out there? They basically spent 5 minutes doing not very much. Dave Meltzer described it as possibly the worst world title match he'd ever seen, and to be honest, what he's in a good position to talk him to, I can't imagine he's far wrong. If we are going to call it a world title match, I think we probably are. But, I mean, this match was just nothing. And then, to top it all off, when we started this show talking about steroids and how it might affect WCW, the opening gambit in this match, the first part of the first match of the show, was Rick Rude and Road Warrior Hawk flexing in the middle of the ring. And it's like, okay, it hadn't happened yet. The stuff with the steroid stuff happened a couple of weeks later. But it was, to me, it was just so telling whether it was just an oversight or whether someone was trying to have a joke or whether it was just a low IQ kind of putting together of a match. But just to have Rick Rude and Road Warrior Hawk, who are both big muscular guys, flexing in amongst all the stories we've had this month, I just thought was incredible. It was the only thing about this match was incredible. It was terrible. But Craig, what was your thoughts on the opener?
It's certainly difficult to disagree with anything that you've just said. It was certainly a surprise opener considering the title and the stuff about the international title that we discussed previously. And whilst Road Warrior Hawk may be a very competent and indeed probably better than that, a very good tag team wrestler, he's nothing as a solo wrestler. It became very apparent very early on into this one that it was Animal, that if there was a solid, very good wrestler between the two of them, it was Animal that deserved that crown. What I found interesting was, through watching it, I sort of picked up more the idea that it was actually Rude that was carrying the injury rather than Hawk. So it was very clear that one of them was injured. It was very clear that the match was never going to amount to much. But it's still quite disappointing that it was a double EQ, that ended that one. That's never something great to for a pay-per-view.
Colin, anything much to add?
Well, I was surprised that it was only, I think it went about 5-6 minutes.
And how about half of that was just them posing?
Half of that was them posing and flexing.
Talking the crowd and stuff.
It was obvious that one of them was injured.
Why send him out there?
Because they've advertised the fact that they've got this title match on the card. They figure, right, one of these guys is injured, go out there for a couple of minutes, don't do a lot, but we'll have you double count out. We'll get you out there and back into the back, and then it's done.
I don't know. If someone's injured, just even if you haven't got time to kind of maybe set up a quick angle where someone attacks Road Warrior Hawk backstage, and then Rude says, I've not got an opponent, and then someone else says, yes, you have, I'm going to fight you. Something convoluted, at least to give us a match. Don't give us this. It's awful. And things didn't get any better, Colin, with the Shockmaster and the Equalizer. This was 2.5 minutes, and we want to talk about pain regarding the Doink match. This was, I think the only positive was it was brief.
Oh dear. I don't, it seems every month we talk about WCW, we talk about how bad the Shockmaster is.
With good reason.
Yeah, we have got good reason, you're right. Yeah, what can you say? It's the Shockmaster. He's, from what I could see, his finisher that he used on the Equalizer was awful. He picked him up into a bear hug and almost just fell forward with him.
It's meant to be a Spice Buster, but he basically just jumps and lands on his knees and then falls over.
Landed on his knees and then let the guy go. I thought, that's the finish, really? Okay, well, if you say so, well done, Shockmaster, you win.
I describe it as a bear hug flop in my notes.
That's about the way to describe it. I was going to say, Craig, what were your notes for this one? But I mean,
it's also one word if you're interested.
Okay, alright, I won't ask. But
no, it simply reads, and it's not as good as the last one. It simply reads, Christ.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that.
It's awful. It's the sort of squash match you'd have normally seen. And when you look at the time limit, you think, oh, this is clearly a squash match. Shockmaster batters the equaliser, gets the easy victory. He looks quite good, but it isn't. It's the polar opposite. The equaliser gets an incredible amount of offence against the Shockmaster, and then the Shockmaster hits what looks like a drunk guy holding a guy and falling over as a finishing move, and then gets the victory. It's awful. And from what was a poor month for in-ring action, that's up there as one of the... In fact, you know what? I'm going to go out there. That's the worst match of the month.
No, the Doit match was worse. I mean, like...
Nope. I'm not having that.
If I'm going to get killed...
I smiled, so it almost comes close to ticking the comedy box.
If I'm going to get killed, kill me in 2.5 minutes, not 10. One positive, to put positive spin, I have to say that this had a clean finish. I can go with that. Bear in mind...
Hello, clutching at straws.
Yeah, well, like, this is WCW. We have to make note when there's a clean finish, because it doesn't happen very often.
The thing you can say about that match is how bad the Shockmaster match was, which then was followed, you know, it followed on from the Rude Hawk match. Two terrible matches in a row. Thanks for watching Clash of the Champions, everyone.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's stay tuned. I mean,
stay tuned for more.
Yeah. And
stay tuned for where the Shockmaster's new Village People gimmick is going to go.
Like, turn him into a member of the Village People. That would make him at least entertaining. Well, I don't know.
There would be something there at the very least.
I'll tell you what, there was one great thing, and I will mention it now while I remember it, but as Dave Meltzer quite rightly pointed out, the three people that got clean wins on this show were all related to Dusty Rhodes, which I found very interesting indeed. And I think as well, we're crapping all over this, rightly so. The equaliser, he got pinned and he popped straight back up. It's like, it's a terrible finisher, but at least sell it. And he's going to put you down for the three. He got pinned, then he jumped up and ran around. Oh, God. Let's not spend any more time on this. Next up, Lord Steven Regal pinned Johnny B. Badd in 6 minutes. Colin, what do you think? Johnny B. Badd as a cross between Tatanka and Rick Martel?
It's an awful character. I just, you know, I look at him and I see Little Richard. I look at his face and I see Little Richard walking around, and I just, what's the deal with the oversized party poppers on the way to the ring and the shooting the confetti at the end? I just don't get it. I really don't.
Craig?
I hate the Johnny B. Badd character. It's awful. This match was totally divided for me because I like William Regal. I like that sort of aloof heel character that you're meant to hate because he's the different class as yourself. So you then want the
British,
other guy.
Which helps. I don't know whether we're impartial.
No, you're absolutely right. And then on the other hand, you've clearly got the guy you should be cheering on, and then it's Johnny B. Badd, and you're just like, come on, Regal, just win this. So yeah, there's nothing there that. There's nothing in the Johnny B. Badd character that you would want to cheer on. This is the little bit divided loyalties match for me. I should hope that Regal would lose it because of his heel character, but in the end, I want him to win it.
Yeah, and maybe I was just so desensitized on what came before it, but I thought this was a decent match as well, which I think when you, we just have like, even if it was only 7.5 minutes of just awful in-ring action, it was nice to see a couple of guys just have a, you know, a nice, decent 5-minute match. I think too complicated to write a screwy finish, but it's WCW, what do you expect? And again, it was like, this wouldn't have been so, this stuck out as a decent match because the other two were so bad. But I think, yeah, I don't think you can blame these two for what went before them, and so I think this was fine. It was alright. It was just...
It was the best match so far of the card.
Yes. Although, I think if we'd have had a triple threat, we'd have put on a better match than the first two. Would we? I don't know. we'll see about that.
I think so.
Fortunately, Colin, things did pick up when we had Steve Austin and Brian Pillman. This was... Well, you know, by any standard, forget what came before it. I thought this was excellent.
For the amount of time they were given, very good match. I loved Jesse Ventura on commentary. He was absolutely distraught at the fact that the blondes were fighting each other. He was devastated that this tag team had broken up. And, yeah, ultimately, yes, very good match.
Craig, as you finished filling up your water bottle there, what was your thoughts on that?
Sorry, yes, best match of the card so far. Probably the best match of... Sorry, the second best, in my opinion, match of the evening. It's got all the hallmarks that you'd expect. You've got a tag team that had split up and thus a feud ensued. And they did everything that you'd expect. And considering... Talent that was there, they put on a pretty good match.
Yeah, I think you're both underplaying this. I thought this was like by far the best match we saw this month. Well, by far the main event was good as well. Actually, this show. But I thought in terms of the one thing I loved about this was that, as you say, it was a rivalry. They had some backstory behind it, which got the crowd more invested. And they didn't wait. Pillman came storming out. They didn't wait for ring the bell. They didn't wait for Boatman to get in the ring. They just started fighting. They started brawling around the ring. Really high intensity stuff, which was the complete antithesis of what came before it on this show. And again, I thought this had everything. At 9 minutes, I mean, my thought was, right, I want to see these two on pay-per-view and give them longer. And let's see what they can do, because it was great, it was athletic, it was quick. The finish, while it was a bad finish, but I think for once, again, you know, as we say, you know, but you can't, there is room for bad finishes, WCW just has so many of them. I thought it was a logical finish in the sense that it did set up room for the rematch as and when they want to do it. I just thought it was a bit overly dangerous. I mean, I think the idea was that it was, Pillman jumped up onto the ropes and was kind of going to do some kind of splash dive or something like that in Austin on the inside of the ring. And Bob Parker kind of pushed him off. And the idea was he pushes him off and it looks like he lands on his head. My main concern with that is that he almost did, which I thought for a 9-minute match in the middle of a free TV show, I thought was a little bit excessive. But this was very good. Moving on to Dustin Rhodes against Paul Orndorff, and I will mention that Dustin Rhodes was accompanied by his father, Dusty, and Paul Orndorff was ordered by accompanied by the assassin, which will come to play in the later story. One, I think this probably exposed a little bit just like how much more over Dusty was than anyone else on this show, active or otherwise. And it had a clean finish, Colin, which, when I was live tweeting the show, I did put on the thing, will Dusty book his own son in a screwy finish match, which he is at ringside? The answer is no, albeit it was only a roll-up. But this was a decent match, actually. I liked the story they told. I liked there were times during this match when they had kind of Dusty coaching Dustin, which I quite like. And after the match, I mean, the crowd went berserk when Dusty kind of let loose on the assassin, Colin.
They did. And can I please say for the record that if the assassin is in fact an assassin, I would suspect he's the worst one in the world. He's not exactly the most athletic of men, rather rotund even.
He's not the sort of guy that could hide in the shadows either, because some assassins could be like the silent but creepy type. They're not quick, they just kind of sneak in and they bang. He is huge.
Every time they showed him on camera, I thought he was... He was going to pop out of his mask. His mask looked like it was barely staying on his head.
As a rotund guy, I take objection to the fact that you don't believe I could also be athletic.
Well, there are reasons why. Although none of us are exactly the most athletic, so I'm not sure it's that we're necessarily the best three people to talk.
Back to the match. No, for what it was, again, it was a decent match. There, like you clearly said, yes, there was a clean finish. It was a schoolboy roll-up, but it was a clean finish nonetheless.
Craig, and the after-match stuff with Dusty, again, as I say, it was really good because it was the first time really all night that the crowd were, not to say into anything, I think they were into the stuff with the Blondes. It was just that, well, they were a heel tag team that were just split up, so, you know, it's not like they had that much time to cheer Pillman or Blue Austin. But I thought when the match ended and Dusty attacked the Assassin, they went insane. And this is a crowd pop. And it, forget anything that happened in WWF. This is an incredible crowd pop. And the frustrating thing is, and I guess you can say that Dusty has the history that not many other people on this card have got, but I think the frustrating thing was is that he is so much more over, really, than a lot they've got on that card.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, like you say, you'll struggle to find anything with a bigger pop on this card or anywhere else than when Dusty laid out the Assassin after the match. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing. I don't think it is. I think the idea of the match itself was as good as it was. The match was very good. The match was good, but it was overshadowed by the oldie days feud between the Assassin and Dusty Rhodes. And yeah, Dusty Rhodes got a great pop at the end, but I think it probably says more about what was going on in the ring than anything else.
Let's move on to the next match. The Nasty Boys defeated Sting and Davey Boy Smith. Colin, what did you think of this one?
Do you think when they book a Nasty Boys match, they call the finish the Nasty Boys finish?
Because it's the same every single time.
Every time.
There is a babyface who is about to win by a pinfall, and then one of the Nasty Boys jumps on the top rope. The referee conveniently gets distracted by the other member of the tag team. Nasty Boys drops the elbow and then wins the match. It's all of them.
I think, didn't they even win the tag titles in WWF at WrestleMania against the Hart Foundation the same way?
No, it involved Jimmy Hart's megaphone.
But it was still when the other guy was pinned, wasn't it?
It was very much a variation of the same, yeah, but there was at least the twist of there being someone else involved. Yeah, you're right. Virtually every Nasty Boys match ended the same.
I don't.
And here they are, prominent in the WCW. That says quite a lot.
Certainly does. I mean, to fill in the story on this match, basically, Davey Boy kind of got in a brawl, I think, with Sags on the ramp. Then Rick Rude ran out and hit the Rude Awakening on Davey Boy, which basically knocked him out for most of the match. Davey Boy kind of crawled to the ring and basically just kind of hung on ringside, which made it a 2-on-1 handicap match, which I quite liked.
Wasn't the attack by Rude, it was precursored by the little segment they showed with Davey Boy challenging the winner.
Yeah.
The International World Heavyweight Championship.
Well, I guess Davey Boy's a bit screwed. There wasn't a winner.
Well, yeah, exactly.
You have to wait for the next one. But yeah, like this was, it was okay. It wasn't, you know, I mean, I'm not that enamoured by the Nasty Boys. And as you say, Colin, like the finish is just the one they rotate every time. It's not a screw finish. As you say, it's the Nasty Boys finish. But I mean, Sting, as we say kind of earlier in the show, compared to the WWF guys, Sting is over. Davey Boy, just to a degree, is over. I think you could insert either of these two into the WWF main event picture and they'd be over more than almost anybody. And that kind of made up for the match. It was decent. It was no better. Craig, what did you think of the match itself?
You see, of all the guys on the WCW roster at this time, I think Sting's the guy that could do the face in peril and also keep the crowd interested whilst getting a little bit of offence in there. So I think whatever score we're going to give this match out of 10, I think the majority of it has to go to towards Sting's performance. Personally, I gave this a 4 out of 10, and it was largely due to Sting's ability to garner sympathy from the crowd, whilst also looking strong in places. But it was also brought down by the fact, as Colin alluded to previously, just that virtually you know what was coming because it was a Nasty Boys match.
Yeah, and we'll move on to the main event, Ric Flair against Vader. This really was good. I mean, what I said earlier, that the Austin Pill match for Streets Ahead, I probably was doing this match a little bit deserved, because this was very good. Again, didn't have a lot of time. And I questioned WCW's logic of having an hour and a half TV show, effectively, when you cut out all the ad breaks, and yet having seven matches on the card. Because, okay, and it's TV, and, you know, by hook or by crook, they're going to get to Vader and Flair on pay-per-view at Starrcade next month, whether they want to or not. So I guess you could say, well, this was kind of the teaser, and I think in that role, it perfectly served its job. I thought, this was just great. This is, yeah, Vader's on top of his game. Flair is excellent in the babyface role. I mean, he's athletic beyond his years. And this is really good until the finish, which we'll wait until the finish. Colin, what was your thoughts on the match?
I thought, yeah, for the time they had, I enjoyed it. It was a good match. Like you said, Vader, I love Vader. I think he's fantastic. I really do. Some of the stuff he can do, the size he is, brilliant. Plays a brilliant heel. Ric Flair, he does play a good face. I prefer him as a heel, but he does a good job as the baby face as well.
I think that the temptation is just to cheer Flair, isn't it? I think it's one of those things where you really have to have an over baby face to get Flair over as a heel. At the moment, Craig, what's your thoughts on the match?
Yeah, as a 9-minute match goes, this was pretty solid. You've alluded to the main event, and we'll obviously come back to that. But they did for two guys, two great guys, and to come back off Colin's comments, I absolutely love Vader. There's probably never been a big guy that, other than maybe Andre the, in fact, maybe other than Andre the Giant, it's been as good as Vader. I just think he does the monster heel really well, and I think that maybe that's where slightly Andre comes down a wee bit, because I didn't really dig the whole Andre heel thing. But Vader is a great monster heel, and when given 9 minutes, Flair and Vader put on a really good match, and what they were given, they turned out, like I say, a really great match. It was all that they were able to do. So, yeah, no, I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, and well, to continue the loving on Vader, I mean, I can only echo what you guys say about how good he is. I think one thing that sets Vader apart compared to other big guys, and I think it actually kind of helps his cause, is that he is big, and not to say he's necessarily physically quick, but I think the speed of his attacks is what really sets him apart in terms of how good he is a brawler. I think that kind of what enhanced his match with Cactus Jack last month, is that, you know, you often see big guys who are tall, but they're quite lethargic. And you almost think, well, okay, they're big, they're strong, but like in a fight, I feel like I could outrun them if nothing else, or maybe we could outrun them. But I think your average athletic guy could outrun them. I don't get the sense with Vader that's the case. I think he's got that athleticism relative to his size to back up how big a brute he is. And again, yeah, just to join the loving on Vader. With regards to the finish, I mean, it wasn't quite as bad as the finish to the Rude Flair match from last month, which was horrendous. But this was pretty bad. Basically, there was a ref bump. And so Vader gets up. I can't remember what happened. But basically, that's right. Vader gets up, hits the Vader salt on Flair. And then the ref comes round and then crawls forward, and as he does that, he puts his right arm out, and everyone thinks that's one. It's helped by the fact that Jesse Ventura's counting along. Throws his left arm forward as he gets there at a thing, everyone thinks that's two. And so, hang on. No, that's right. Flair's spinning him, because everyone pops. That's right, sorry. And then he goes for the third one, so he puts his right arm out, and three. And the crowd goes berserk, because they think they've just seen a world title change. It was Flair covering Vader, because Flair rolled out of the way of the Vader song. That's right. a lot of wrestling to watch this month, so excuse that. But yeah, so everyone goes up, Flair thinks he's won the title, and it turns out that the ref wasn't counting, he was merely crawling his way towards the thing to ultimately disqualify Vader so that Flair would win via disqualification. But the whole thing was just so hokey, and it was a shame because you've just teased us, and the crowd went with it. The crowd didn't go with very much on this show, other than the bit with Dusty Rose and to a lesser extent some of the stuff with Sting and with the Hollywood Blondes. The crowd popped, like, wow, I didn't expect to see that. And then it was just like, oh God, that was the finish you came up with. Colin?
I did watch it. I say I loved the match, but when I saw the referee waving it off after his over-elaborate crawl towards the men, I said to you at the time that that wasn't a free count. It was crawling, because obviously the crowd popped, Jesse Ventura popped. They thought they'd see the title change, but when I saw the referee waving it off, I did quite literally put my head in my hands and shake my head, because I thought, that's the finish you came up with. It did not come across well on TV at all. You could, like, us watching it, we saw what they were trying to do, but I didn't like the finish at all.
Great.
It was an incredible pop, and it was just absolutely soiled by the fact that it was just such a screwy finish. It's just difficult to look past that point.
I mean, to frame all this in that, yes, it was a horrendous finish in just how utterly stupid it was. But this is only a TV show. This isn't a pay-per-view. They have, whether they want to or not, set up a match between Flair and Vader. I don't mind the idea that they had a screwy finish here. I can, you know, be frustrated at how stupid it was, and I am. But I don't mind the fact they won't, because this is the occasion where you want the bad finish. You don't want it in all these other matches that nobody really cares about. This is the time when you want the bad finish. Okay, Flair, everyone knows that Flair pinned Vader. There was a 3 count, so they can set that up for a rematch. I don't mind that. It was horrendous, but I do have to caveat it with all that. Colin, you were going to say?
They had the match end with Vader being disqualified for a ref bump. You know, one of the staples of professional wrestling that happens night in, night out, any wrestling show.
And at WCW, night in, night out, match in, match out.
Exactly. And it just on this occasion, it was a disqualification. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Again, I like the match, and I don't mind the idea of a bad finish. It was a stupid finish. As you quite rightly say, it was hypocritical based on what other things got on. But it sets up, and I think if these guys get longer at Starrcade, they should, in theory, have a match that's better than this. Craig, before we move on, we'll go through some score ratings overall for the show. What do you give this out of 10?
It was all right in places, but I'd probably still just give it 5 out of 10. There were some good points, the Austin Pillman in the main event, but the rest of it dragged it down a wee bit, so 5 out of 10.
Colin?
I'd give it 5 out of 10 as well. I think there were some high points of the Austin Pillman Flair Vader match apart from the finish. To a point, even the Regal Jeffrey Bad match was half decent too. When you couple that though with the international title, the Shockmaster, the Nasty Boys finish again. Five I think is fair.
We have a unanimous decision. I will also give it a 5. Again, you know, it's a TV show, so I think I said this when we did the Clash last, is that I don't always kind of scale it on the same thing, in the sense that this is a freebie. People aren't paying for this. You can, as I said, you can set up for bigger things down the line. The Austin Pillman match was excellent for 9 minutes. The Flair Vader match sans the finish was excellent for about 9 minutes. The stuff at the start was horrendous, but again, it wasn't a bad show. I kind of enjoyed this based on those two kind of peaks in the middle. Take or leave the stuff at the start, and the action in the middle, like once you got beyond those first two matches, the action actually wasn't too bad. The Regal match was okay. The Orndorff Rose match was okay, and the nice bit after the match was kind of, you know, a nice crowd pop. And the tag match with the Nasty Boys sans the finish, and you're kind of saying that with all matches at the moment, as we said with the Halloween Havoc card. There is some decent action here. So I think, yeah, 5 with my frustrations well taken into account. And we'll move on to Battle Bowl now. And neither of you two have watched this show. This Battle Bowl, as we said at the start, was a pay-per-view. I sat through it for my sins. Let me tell you, this show made anything we discussed tonight look brilliant. As Craig said, there were 32 men in the back. They had these horrendous segments with Mean Gene Oakland and Fifi at the raffle wheel, whatever you want to call it, where they were drawing names out of the hat to be drawn out. And basically, it consisted of 8 segments of Mean Gene Oakland hitting on Fifi. If you imagine that and imagine it being bad, it was 10 times worse. It was horrendous. The idea was it was an 8-match tag team random tournament. Each team that went through would advance to the Battle Bowl, Battle Royal at the end of the show, and then whoever won the Battle Bowl, Battle Royal won, I don't really know what. They never really explained it. Some sort of ring I think they battled for in the past, and I don't know. I mean, to me it would have made logical sense just to stick a title match on the line. They could have had a breakout moment for someone, but again, this is WCW, so logic doesn't really come into it often. But basically, I won't go through match by match. I won't read out the card. Just divide up the WCW roster in any way you like, and you probably would have come up with this, because they were all random. All 8 tag matches, without exception, told exactly the same heel face, can they coexist storyline. All of them. And to me, one, that just was silly because you're telling the same story over and over again. Secondly, it was even more silly in the sense that there was no match the crowd could really get invested in. Because it was all, oh, can he coexist? Oh, there's a heel, there's a baby face. Oh, there's a tag team that were on opposite sides. I won't go through every match. I'll just kind of pick out, low lights, I think is the only way to describe it. But we open up with Vader and Cactus Jack against Charlie Norris and Kane of Harlem Heat. This was obviously, the story with this was Vader and Cactus Jack trying to coexist. And this was probably kind of the main takeaway from any of the matches, because it was the two guys that were involved in the pay-per-view the previous month. Can they coexist? And after brawling at the start, they basically began to work together a little bit and won the match. It wasn't a great match, but it was at least logical. I'm just kind of scanning through the card here for anything of note that I can remember. There was the match with King Kong, Dustin Rhodes, Awesome Kong and the Equalizer that Dave Meltzer described as possibly the worst wrestling match he'd ever seen. He wouldn't be far wrong. Basically, it consisted of King Kong and Awesome Kong refusing to fight. And the Equalizer, who's not any more over than they are, Dustin Rhodes, who just isn't over either. We carry on down the card, and again, it's just, the Ric Flair Austin Two Cold Scorpio match was decent, actually. Mainly because Two Cold Scorpio did a lot of the in-ring work for his team, and Max Payne didn't have to get involved. The other two tag matches, it was the same story over and over again for about 2 hours, 15 minutes. There are enemies who I wouldn't wish this on. This just wasn't fun to watch. The Battle Royal at the end was decent. Once they got down to the final four, it was Austin, Flair, Vader and Sting. That was the only peak of the night. And it was a peak relative to everything else on the card. That was decent. Again, gents, I have to score I'll give it a 0.5 out of 10 for the last 10 minutes. But my God, be thankful that I didn't kind of say you have to watch this to review it, because it was horrendous. And again, the bigger thing here is that this didn't seem particularly important, maybe. There were no real major, kind of storyline progressions. But it's like, wrestling can be fun. It's not like boxing, where you kind of put guys out there, and it can often be luck whether to you an opponent enjoyable or not. This is wrestling. You can book whatever you like. You can tell whatever story you like. And yet you chose to sell this. It wasn't bad, like, we talk about screwy finishes. Ironically, The only redeeming feature of this show was the disproportionately high amount of WCW matches that ended in clean finishes. But you can do whatever you like. You can give us whatever you want. And we got this. And gents, just, as I say, be thankful that you both opted not to watch this. This is probably the worst wrestling show I've ever seen by a mile. I mean, it was just boring. It, like, as I say, I can take bad stuff. Just don't give me boring wrestling. And this is what it is. I don't want to spend any more time on it. Yes. So we will move into the closing part of the show. Whoa. Sorry, guys, I ranted, but I needed to. I sat through it for 3 hours, so I'm going to take the time to take that rant. We'll move on to our kind of end of the month stuff. Craig, I'll come to you first. Your kind of match slash moment slash thing of the month that people should go back and watch.
For me, whilst we might be critical of the month in general, there are three matches that particularly stand out. The main event of Clash of the Champions between Vader and Flair, the Smoky Mountain Wrestling tag team title match at Survivor Series, and the opening match at Survivor Series. However, I'm going to opt for the first match, the Team Razor versus Team Diesel, I guess. It was good. It was throwaway. It was fun. The ending wasn't probably what you'd expect. So for me, that sort of maxed out as a little bit different, and thus my match of the month.
Colin.
I would give it to Flair and Vader bar the finish as the match of the month for me. I thought that the Heavenly Bodies and the Rock and Roll Express was the best WWF match of the month. But I think that the match between Flair and Vader edged it for me. Just. It would have been really over the top if it had a decent finish.
I'm surprised neither of you at least mentioned the Austin Pillman match, because that was my match of the month. Again, you know, it's a bit short, fair enough. Not that Vader and Flair is necessarily terribly long, but I just thought as a match where, as I said, for me, the best part of the match was, ironically, the bit before it started, where there was no proper introductions, there was no slow walk to the ring, and just kind of slow walk into the match. They jumped straight into it, and that kind of jolted me out of my seat and says, oh, okay, this is, you know, obviously, you know, no, it's personal, it's the Blondes, they split up. But it kind of, I think, particularly what long gone before it was so flat, it was a nice way of just shuttling people into action. Oh, okay, this is interesting. They brawled round the ring and outside the ring as well. And I thought, for me, that was a highlight. Again, some of the Survivor Series stuff was good. As we covered, the Vader Flair match was very good, but I think that will pip it. And that will end this week's show. We've gone long, but I'm not surprised given how much we've had to cover. Craig, thank you very much for joining us this week. Remind us of where people can follow you, your blog, and also your new gig with Sun Wrestling, or Sun Scotland Wrestling.
Indeed. So, you can follow me on Twitter at Twitter.com/CraigW4584. You can also check out my musings along with a couple of my pals, where we write a wrestling blog called Ring the Damn Bell. That's ringthedamnbell.wordpress.com. And very recently, in fact, issue 2 or column 2 of my Scottish Sun wrestling column debuted this week. Went up this week even, where I talk about all the goings on in Scottish wrestling, which, you know, maybe one of the hottest scenes going, certainly in Europe at this stage. But yeah, so plenty of places to check me out. Chatting about wrestling.
And I believe as well, to kind of parallel what we've been talking about, I believe Vader's coming to Scotland next month.
Yes, indeed. I'm hopeful, very hopeful of being able to at least get a chat with him, if not get those trademark forearms in a corner of a ring with him. But yeah, so Vader is wrestling in Scotland next month, which is quite exciting.
Where is that show for the sake of promotion, if anyone's got an hour and 40 odd minutes into this?
Yeah, for anyone that's still with us, it's in East Gilbride, he's wrestling for a promotion called British Championship Wrestling. Equal parts random and equal parts amazing that a superstar of Vader's quality is wrestling in Scotland. And if I can slightly plug my next Scottish Sun column, he is in a tag match with Scottish wrestling sensation Grado, who, if you haven't checked this guy out, you need to check out his YouTube clips with him. So just YouTube Grado and Colt Cabana. They have a great time during the Edinburgh Fringe Comedy Festival. But yeah, so Vader's teaming with Grado in the, one of the big matches announced so far for British Championship Wrestling.
No, I think as well, if you've got a spare, I think it was, 30, 40 minutes, there was a documentary read on Grado, which I found completely by accident.
British wrestler?
Something like that. It was just a documentary, yeah. Basically just documenting kind of, not Grado's rise, not necessarily huge, but he is certainly kind of noteworthy in the British wrestling scene these days.
And rightly so though, if I can go slightly off on a tangent, because whilst, and I'm really looking forward to chatting to the guy, he's fantastic. When you go to a show in Scotland, and he's doing a lot of stuff in the UK, the crowd goes wild for him, because what he may be lacking in the ring, and I don't want to accuse him of lacking anything in the ring, he more than makes up for charisma and getting the crowd on their feet, and there's a lot to be said for that. But yeah, the Grado's one of the most interesting bits of Scottish wrestling at the moment. Yeah, that's the sort of stuff I write about. That's the sort of stuff I'm used about. So if you're even remotely interested in that, do check me out on Twitter and take
it
from there.
Your blog and your Scottish and Colin. Colin, follow that.
good luck.
Anything going on in your life, Colin, that's noteworthy?
You can follow me on @C_Judders. That's about it, really.
Come on, Colin, you've had a kid. Let's talk about the fact that you're into parenthood now. This is bigger than anything.
Whoa, hang on. This show's already gone long enough, and let's not bring his child into this either. Anyway, there's that. I'm still disappointed you didn't call him Bob. But anyway, we'll leave that for another time. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter @BobbyBammer for some current day wrestling stuff. @Wrestling20YRS is the official Twitter account for the show. I think it's Starcade only next month. Starcade in 20 years ago terms happens like at the end of December, but it's the holidays, so I might end up live tweeting it in like a week or so, something like that. But just follow Twitter and I'll let you know about that. And yeah, wrestling20years, .com, that's years, YARS.com. You can find all your back episodes. iTunes, we're on there. Leave us a rating and a review if you've got the time, that'd be appreciated. We're on RSS if you don't use iTunes as well, so you can subscribe anywhere you like. And I think that's it. So anyway, I've been Bob Bamba. This has been the November 1993 episode of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. And until next time, goodbye.